swept the technique.
All teams covered. No talking points necessary. You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Look, I don't think Brock Purdy's all that good. I think he's a great story. Mr. Irrelevant has come in as intentionally...
Pretty good.
He's pretty good. He's not Super Bowl winning good. I think Brock Purdy is going to be the... is going to be the thing that keeps the 49ers from winning a Super Bowl. And that's not to say that Jimmy Garoppolo would have won it for them. That's not to say that Trey Lance would have won it for them. I don't think that Brock Purdy is like this huge, significant drop-off from either one of those guys from a production point of view. I just don't think that the 49ers have a quarterback-worthy Super Bowl winner, a Super Bowl winning quarterback. Look, I think Brock Purdy was the best quarterback in that game yesterday. I think he's a better quarterback than Rain, ooh, Dakota Prescott.
Wow.
You don't think so?
I don't.
I do. I think it's obvious. Like, Rain Dak Prescott's going to screw things up, whereas Brock Purdy's at least not going to screw things up.
See, the thing to me about Dak Prescott is he's good, but he's not great, though his salary says he has to be. And I think that when looking at Brock Purdy, I think Dak still has so many measurables and intangibles better than Brock Purdy. But Brock Purdy, who really has to step on it to get the ball on the out routes from across the field, and you can tell doesn't throw a perfect spiral, and he struggled a little bit in the first half, but he found it when they needed to find it. It's, again, it used to be a compliment, now it's a cuss word, but as a game manager, he has so much talent around him that all he has to do is not screw it up, and Dak screwed it up. Like, if he doesn't do Dak things yesterday, which he didn't, because he could have. He had a couple balls go through defenders' hands where he made the same kind of throws Dak did. It's just that they weren't caught the way Dak's were. So I think Dak Prescott is still way better than Purdy, but I think that Brock Purdy continues to do just enough to not screw it up, which in essence was what Jimmy Garoppolo did for them too.
That's fine to have that type of quarterback whenever you have the rest of the roster Francisco has. Whenever you have Christian McCaffrey, Eli Mitchell in the running game, and even throw a Deebo Samuel in, because we know that he likes to run the football. And then the receiving core that they have,
Kittle and
McCaffrey in there too.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Deebo as well. So, like, you have an incredibly talented team, and that's before you even talk about the defensive side of the ball. Like, we give Kyle Shanahan his flowers all the time and how much talent they have on the offensive side of the ball outside of the quarterback position. And, oh yeah, San Francisco has the best defense in the entire NFL. Now, I do think that the Brock Purdy problem will catch up to him this week. I don't think that the 49ers are going to go into Philly with Brock Purdy as their quarterback and beat the Philadelphia Eagles. And if they do, okay, I'll eat crow. And I'll admit that I was wrong on Brock Purdy. But I'm watching that game yesterday, and you mentioned all the ducks that Brock throws, the interceptable passes that Brock threw in that game, but they were able to overcome it. Look, they scored 19 points against the Cowboys defense. The offense wasn't like this juggernaut that just steamrolled over the Dallas Cowboys. But Dak Prescott and the Cowboys scored 12 points against the 49ers defense, which is the top defense in the NFL, and it took a huge hit when Tony Pollard broke his leg in the first half. That was a huge loss.
Massive, yep.
But whenever I look at the Dallas Cowboys and what is holding them back from being a Super Bowl caliber team, it quite frankly is the quarterback. The quarterback costs them big games. The quarterback is also a hindrance to them going further into the playoffs. And if you want to throw Mike McCarthy into that conversation too, okay, that's fine. Dak doesn't elevate his team, just like Mike McCarthy maybe doesn't elevate his team, although he's won 12 games back-to-back years. But I don't think you can win a Super Bowl with a head coach quarterback combination of Mike McCarthy and Rain Dakota Prescott.
See, that's the thing too, because a lot of teams would take it and they wouldn't put as much blame on Dak because they don't have the kind of aspirations and goals the Cowboys do. But I would say that it was going to say it's a three-headed monster of problems for the Cowboys, but it's maybe almost four. And the almost four is Jerry Jones, because Jerry Jones continues to do things that kind of pigeonholes his franchise.
What has he done?
Well, I thought McCarthy was a horrible hire at the time, and I still don't think that I've changed my opinion. And I think that was a misstep by a guy that likes the sexiness and the splash of a big name or a big contract.
He's won 24 games in the last 2 years.
He has. He's won more games. Right. But what has that gotten him? Right. Because their aspirations are higher than any other team, maybe in the entire sport. So that's my point. The fact that Jerry can't get out of his own way, that Jerry wants to be splashy. And that would be to one of my other issues with the Cowboys. There's everything you said about Dak, but there's Zeke's contract. And you did Zeke's contract before you had to. and you overpaid him, and because you're still paying him because you refused to admit the mistake and you couldn't cut him and you wouldn't cut him and the finances would be even more painful, he has held you back because you couldn't make other improvements that otherwise you possibly could have made as a franchise because you're overpaying the second best running back, maybe the third best running back on your roster, yeah, and he's killing you. So you got McCarthy, you got Dak, you got Zeke's contract and inability to be who he was, and then you got Jerry. So there's a ton of things going wrong. But then when you also factor in the high expectations of the Cowboys, it puts even more pressure on all those guys, and it starts with Dak. Like I said, you can't be mad for when a guy gets his contract because his time's up at the right time like Dak did. But at the same time, because it's placed for the Dallas Cowboys, the expectations are once you sign on the dotted line, you got to take it to another level and be one of the elite quarterbacks in this league, and I'm not sure he can do that.
It's a pretty polarizing take whenever you say Purdy's better than Dak, and seeing both sides of it on the HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776, 2055. Purdy over Dak, you're losing it, dude. Look at that sample size. That's delusional, dude. 8769. Well, Brock Purdy at least didn't lose the game. Dak was main issue yesterday. Dak has more potential. I completely agree that Dak has the tools. Dak has the skills. Dak has a better, well, I'm going to say a stronger arm. I'm not going to say a more accurate arm. There's no doubt that Dak has the size, that Dak is a better athlete than Brock Purdy. I think Brock Purdy has it upstairs, where Brock Purdy does throw some passes that are interceptable. He also makes some really smart decisions and doesn't throw a lot of passes that are interceptable. Throws it away. Lives to fight another down. That interception that Dak Prescott had late in the first half when they were in field goal range, unacceptable.
That was a huge swing
in the game. I didn't think so.
I wanted to see it one more time to see if it was tipped or not. Because the first one bothered me because it set a tone where both offenses were struggling, both defenses were holding their own. And then it looked like he could have pulled that thing back. And instead, once he started the motion, he kept going through with it and just absolutely telegraphed it right to the defensive back who had already stepped in front of the receiver. And you're like, what was that?
Right. And that's where Dak kills you.
Yep.
I mean, there's other moments where it's like, okay, this guy looks like a top seven quarterback in the NFL, where you would never think
that
of
Brock Purdy.
Look at the Minnesota.
He comes off the Green Bay game and other games where they said, what was he doing? And then with all the criticism, he comes back and they blow the doors off of a playoff team like the Vikings, put up a 40-burger, and it looks like he gets it all figured out. So it's not like he can't, but he won't do it when it's needed the most. And because you can't tell me, Jeremy, for an instant, he doesn't feel that extra pressure, too, of doing it because he's doing it as a quarterback for the Cowboys. That ramps everything up another level. And so as good as he was a week ago against, by the way, a defense that fired their defensive coordinator right after the game because they were that bad, but he succeeded, right? And they got him further than they had been previously. But now the expectations are ramped up yet again with being the Cowboys quarterback, with being a team that now everybody's saying whoever wins this game obviously could legitimately go all the way to the Super Bowl. And now the story is getting even more ramped up, and he folded.
713-780-ESPN, the HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. Let's go out there, Troy. You're in the Hive with the Killer Bees. What's going on, Troy?
How's it going? Just want to talk about Dak and Brock. I believe that Brock is actually better than Dak. I mean, obviously he's been in the league longer. Dak has been in the league longer than Brock, but when you compare to both the defenses, they're not too far apart as far as, you know, how good defenses they are. So Dak went against the number one defense, Brock went against a top defense, and Brock didn't throw the ball to the other team and get a pick. I mean, he threw the ball to the other team, but they dropped it. But the point is, Dak had the opportunity to show the world that he can beat the last pick in this past year's draft, and he lost the game. Two picks, and when they had the chance at the last minute at the end of the game, he couldn't do it. He couldn't make the play, run for it, you know, first down, throw for a first down. He just couldn't do it. When it comes to it, he folds under pressure, and Brock didn't.
Appreciate the call, Troy. Yeah, appreciate the call. Thanks for listening to the Killer Bees. I think you kind of sum it up very nicely. And I'm not going to go as far to say that that rain Dakota Prescott's a choker. I think to Troy's point, he's just kind of limited. Like, he's not in that upper echelon of what you would consider Super Bowl caliber quarterbacks, right? Like, we have our tiers. Pat Mahomes with two legs, best quarterback in the world. Pat Mahomes with one leg is the second best quarterback in the world. And then you have a conversation between Joe Burrow and... I thought so. And then you have a conversation between Joe Burrow, Josh Allen, which that might have flipped. That might have flipped yesterday, quite honestly. I think Joe Burrow probably has to be ahead of Josh Allen now.
Oh,
going into Buffalo in the snow and beating up on Josh Allen looked good doing so, and Josh Allen did not look good doing so. So you have quarterbacks in the NFL that are Super Bowl caliber QBs, that you put them on any roster in the NFL and you feel pretty good about that team's chances. You put Pat Mahomes on any roster in the NFL, I mean, I might be going a little bit too far by saying any roster in the NFL, but when Pat Mahomes is your quarterback, you feel like you have a Super Bowl caliber team. When Joe Burrow is your quarterback, you feel you have a Super caliber team. Same thing with Josh Allen. Like, maybe even Justin Herbert, even though he hasn't won a playoff game.
No.
Like, there's certain some quarterbacks you feel like your team could win the Super Bowl that year. With Ray Dakota, I don't. Yeah, I mean,
I'm not putting Mahomes on the Texans.
Let's just say most
Super
rosters. Let's say the top half of the roster.
I think you
in the
got
NFL.
A chance to win.
I might have went too far
almost
with
every game
yeah.
you get into.
But if Pat Mahomes, the next 10 years, you think you could win a Super Bowl that year? Joe Burrow as your head coach, you think you or your quarterback, you think you can win the Super Bowl that year? Josh Allen, and maybe some people were wrong on Josh Allen, but you think that you can win the Super Bowl any single year? And there's not a whole lot of those quarterbacks. Brock Purdy could win the Super Bowl this year, but it's not because of Brock Purdy. It's because of a great roster around Brock Purdy. And I think that Rain Dakota Prescott is more in that conversation, that it's going to take the roster around him more than Rain elevating the roster around him. And then specifically with the head coach, too. Like, you pair both of them where Mike McCarthy's along for the ride, whereas, you know, Rain Dakota is along for the ride. Neither one of those guys are going to elevate the total team to the point where they're Super Bowl winners. And now you're pairing both of them together, and I think that they're both limited.
Yeah, no real question about it. And then when you talk about the other limitations that come with it in the case of Dallas, there's every bit of reason to believe that they're going to get worse next year, because now Tony Pollard's going to go get some money somewhere else probably. And you depleted your wide receiver core with the exception of CeeDee Lamb, and now you got to try and bring that back up so that Dak has more weapons. And if he doesn't, then his performance isn't going to get better. It's probably going to get worse, because we know how important the guys around the quarterback make it. When we say for every Joe Burrow, well, there's a Ja'Marr Chase, and there's a Higgins, and there's a Mixon, and there's all the different guys that help make him good. And when you look at all the guys that we talked about, from Mahomes with Kelce, and even without the Cheetah, look at the way that the receivers have given him, you know, a chance to do what he needs to do, no matter how much accolades come with them. And even with a Josh Allen, whose receiver turned on him yesterday, which was a bad look. But you have a Diggs, and you have a Davis, and you have all the guys that make these guys better. That's why, from a Texans standpoint, when you look at this, it's one thing, because their roster sucks. But from a Cowboys standpoint, CeeDee Lamb's damn good. Jerry Jones, when I throw him into the equation, you didn't have to give up on Cooper. You didn't have to do the things that you did to put yourself more behind an eight ball than in a chance to succeed. So, and then with McCarthy, I think the game has passed him by. I don't know that the game ever really he was caught up with, but Aaron Rodgers made him look damn good. And I think it was the wrong guy at the wrong chance to make Dak possibly better. And so you look at it and say, hey, you know what? Sometimes if this Dallas team and the entire roster was somewhere else, a lot of teams would be saying, it's a good run. We're doing okay. We love Dak. But because it's the Cowboys, it's not acceptable.
713-780-ESPN, the HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Let's get into that Diggs conversation a little bit. Also, is Joe Burrow better than Josh Allen? Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
6761, the truth is always somewhere in between. Dak isn't as bad as you're saying, and Purdy isn't as good as you're saying. I'm not saying Brock Purdy's good. I'm not. Like, I think he's a great story. No. He's a mystery irrelevant. I think that he's a fine, steady hand for leading a really good roster. I'm also saying I think his season ends this weekend against Philadelphia. This is more about Rain Dakota Prescott. I don't think much of Rain.
Has Brock Purdy done enough to get him, at least just by getting him this far, to basically be the starting quarterback of the Niners next year?
That's what they're saying, that he's going to be. I would have a camp battle.
I would be shocked about that.
I would have a camp battle between Lance and Purdy. Like, that's
I might not limit it to that.
It's tough to not limit it to that, because you have two capable starters. Like, what is your other plan?
I would also explore veterans, just because of the fact that those two guys, there's a ton of, like, high ceiling hopes and possibilities, but there's also the chance for some serious failure that could make you scramble during the season, and you could rectify that before it even gets started by bringing in a veteran.
Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know why a veteran would go there, though. Because he's
because you get potentially a Super Bowl.
Could potentially be the third string and cut.
Right.
Like, which veteran's going there? And they're not going to give tons of money to a quarterback to go there when they know that they have two quarterbacks that are capable of starting, and Brock Purdy and Trey Lance. Like, what is the sales pitch to bring that quarterback?
But I think that any quarterback that is a quarterback with confidence that's done it at a certain level looks at those two guys and goes, I can at least do that.
Right. But you're going to want to get paid. Like, if it's a Derek Carr, like, Derek Carr's not going there. He's going to make $40 million. If it's Jimmy Garoppolo, he's been trying to get out of San Francisco for a long time because he wants to be the undisputed starter for an NFL organization and make a significant amount of money as well. I think that if it's to go, like, your route, I think it'd be like a Matt Ryan type. And Matt Ryan's not a great example because he still has a ton of money on his contract. It would have to be somebody like that. That's not only a retread, but it's like his second time to be a retread. Because all of these retreads currently are going to want big money, and they're going to want to be starters somewhere.
Well, I mean, look, I think Teddy Bridgewater in a lot of ways might be a better option with the roster that the Niners have, and the fact that he did it in New Orleans when Drew got hurt and won five in a row, to where if you give him all those weapons and say, just don't screw it up, just utilize the weapons and you'll be fine, I think he looks at the situation and as a free agent goes, you know what? I'll take my chances there because I got a chance to win a ring.
I think Bridgewater's a good call. Like, and that's kind of what I mean, like a recycled retread. Mm-hmm. It can't be a retread for the first time.
But still
time.
Has some talent if the right pieces are around them.
You and I are a little different on Bridgewater. Like,
and I'm just saying because...
Sure, I think that caliber is fine. It's perfect call.
And it's more to the argument of, or the discussion of, hey, he's still got something left in the tank, and he's not going to cost you a whole lot, but he's proven to be exactly what you need him to be, which is just a game manager of a really good roster.
Sure. Yeah, I think that type of veteran I could see. Now, I think San Francisco would also be perfectly content going into camp with Trey Lance and Brock Purdy battling for the starting job, and you're spending almost no money on your quarterback.
But the harsh
position.
Reality could be, Jeremy, you're going starting camp that way. If you finish camp and you still got question marks about both guys, then if you're John Lynch, you got to start really working the phones quickly to go, I got to find a solution.
But why do they have question marks about Brock Purdy? I don't know where those exist.
Well, because he's still grossly limited in a lot of ways. And we truly probably haven't seen all of what he is and can be. But at the same time, we've talked about the fact that he should have had a lot of balls, not a lot of balls, but there have been multiple balls that he should have had picked that he didn't, which helps his stock go up as opposed to if they were picked, he might be looked at differently. So I think that when you have the full, complete roster, every other position on the football field for the Niners, whether you win it all this year or not, especially if you don't, you say, hey, we're done doing this. We've come close too many times with almost set quarterback, and the rest of our roster's too damn good to be wasting away these years.
But they tried to do that with Trey Lance.
Well, they swung and missed so far.
So far is important there. Because I'm not going to call Trey Lance a bust yet. We just haven't
injury,
seen enough of him.
We never really truly saw if this could have been what guys like Lewis Riddick said were going to be his breakout MVP type season.
Yeah, I'm intrigued by Trey Lance as a player. Corey on the text line, does Dallas keep McCarthy? Please tell me no. Don't see how they move on. He's only 24 games in 2 years. I think he's back. And Jerry Jones kind of, you know, mentioned yesterday, too, like there doesn't need to be a decision at the head coach position.
Right. Yeah. No, look, I think that he's still paying him. And if he had flailed and just was mediocre in the regular season this year, there's a Sean Payton argument and discussion that was going to have a lot of traction. Mm-hmm. But because Dak did this, not Mike McCarthy, the blame is going to Dak and McCarthy gets a pass. And he still has a contract, and he's still going to be the head coach.
I don't know if I would go that far, at least from the fan perception, but I think from ownership, it's true.
Yeah, well, but take it a step further. So you lost your best running back on top of your quarterback basically gifting two really bad turnovers, and it's hard to blame the head coach.
Yeah. Yeah. You know what? You know where I think, too, the Cowboys kind of lost a bit, and I know that they couldn't, you know, financially make it make sense with Amari Cooper. But Michael Gallup is your number two receiver coming off a torn ACL.
Off of an injury, yep.
Not great. Not great for Rain to have a bunch of targets to throw the football to.
Jerry elected to trade Cooper, but you could have gotten creative in other areas with your cap and contracts and renegotiations, extensions, etc. And at least, if for no other reason than because Gallup was coming off injury, but also because when those three guys were healthy together, they were pretty damn good as a unit, and that made Dak better.
Yeah. Yeah. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Dak missed numerous throws and reads that a quarterback of his so-called stature shouldn't. I would agree with that. Totally agree with that. Vera's asking thoughts on a Cooks trade to Dallas. Remember that was, wasn't that rumored at the trade deadline where the Cowboys were in on Brandon Cooks, but Nick Caserio was asking too much? I think it makes sense. I was thinking about, I saw some rumblings on Twitter about this earlier today too, that Dallas should bring in Brandon Cooks as a number two receiver to CeeDee Lamb. I think that would be a really good fit for Brandon Cooks, who wants to be a winner.
Make the money
and Dallas, the money would be the issue. As far as I'm concerned, from a Nick Caserio point of view and a Houston Texan point of view, I'm not trading Brandon Cooks if I don't get any better than like a fourth rounder. Than a fourth rounder. I'm not trading Brandon Cooks unless I get a third round pick. I don't think you're getting a second.
No, and in a perfect world, I understand what you're saying. But the world ain't perfect, as we know, and neither is Brandon Cooks. And Brandon Cooks basically, once again, if he hadn't done it previously with his comments, did it again at the end of the season. He doesn't want to be here.
He said he didn't want to be in a rebuild.
Well, but that's exactly what they are. And anybody that watches this team anywhere near remotely closely realizes that it's still smack dab in the middle of a rebuild. He said it without having the cojones to come out and just completely just cut and dry it. I don't want to be here anymore.
Sure.
But he did it his best song and dance around it by making the same point. And if he doesn't want to be here and he's already had the problems of the past, and again, it's another addition by subtraction, but sure, ideally you'd like to get a third and dabble in a second if you could, but at the same time, it might be just better for both sides of no matter what you can get him off the books and get him out of town.
You trading Brandon Cooks for a fifth round pick?
No.
Okay, then.
Well, like, fifth round is really low, but it depends. If he continues to be a problem, then maybe I have no choice. But until I get to the point of no choice, if I know that there's a couple, you know, at least two teams that are interested in his services, I don't think it's going to get that low.
His contract makes it pretty difficult. Now, the Texans could eat some money, but if I get a third rounder for Cooks, he's gone.
I think Green Bay would give you a third rounder.
If somebody's offering me a fourth for Brandon Cooks, I'm playing hardball with Brandon Cooks. I don't care. 713-780-3776. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Greg, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees. What's going on, Greg?
Hey, what's up, guys?
Sports.
I'm about at my wit's end with Dak Prescott. And after seeing what Deshaun Watson got on the open market, three first-round picks, I mean, I know Dak Prescott, you know, has a bit of a reputation for, you know, being inconsistent, but he doesn't have any sexual assault charges on him. I mean, he's got that going for him.
Neither does Deshaun.
If Watson can get three first-round picks,
you ain't getting that for Dak.
Two for Dak, maybe.
Yeah, you're wishful thinking.
What do you think his value is?
Appreciate the call, Greg. You're wishful thinking there. A value for Rain Dakota Prescott
first, and maybe some sweeteners.
Yeah, maybe a late first. Right. I don't think anybody's giving up a top 15 pick.
Maybe.
A little bit older. He's going to be 30 years
injured
old next year.
Because that injury was still serious.
Significant contract. And he's probably going to want another big contract if he gets traded to you. Late first might be pushing it.
Mm-hmm. I think you get a late first. And some sweet.
Who has more trade value? Rain Prescott or Justin Fields?
Justin Fields.
I think so, too. Isn't that wild that Justin Fields has more trade value than Dak Prescott?
But he hasn't had a significant injury.
Rookie contract.
And he's got a rookie contract. And he's significantly younger.
Now, you would have to give Fields a contract. If you're committing to trading for Fields, you're committing to eventually give him a contract
eventually,
in the next couple of years.
Eventually, you
have to do it right away. No. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. All right, let's get into the other playoff games. Burrow better than Allen. And what are the Giants to do now? Did they kind of peak in Brian Daboll's first season? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Your team's our priority. Join the conversation with the Killer Bees. Now coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Are you willing to go as far to say that Joe Burrow is better than Josh Allen? Let's have a quick conversation about Joe Burrow. He is playing his best football since he locked eyes with Branham in that Marriott in Kentucky.
Oh.
He is? Am I wrong?
So that's what's behind all of this?
I can't know. I don't know if it's direct or indirect, but there's no doubt that his play has been boosted by locking eyes with Branham in the Marriott in Kentucky.
In your mind. Okay. look, there's a fair argument to be had that Joe Burrow is better than Josh Allen, and the record speaks for itself because of the fact that Josh Allen been to a Super Bowl? No. When they meet head-to-head? I mean, Joe Burrow beat who? Okay. And then in Josh Allen's home stadium, in the environment that the Bills, and believe me, I've been there, done that, and I have experience with this, so I can tell you why I'm saying this. If you want everybody to come through Orchard Park, if you want everybody to play in the snow, if you want everybody to play Bills football because it's to your advantage, and then the other guy comes in and outplays you and basically sets the tone from the first possession and says, our game, not yours. I feel like I'm at home wherever I play, and go ahead and take all of this. There's no reason to not believe that Joe Burrow is right on the heels of Patrick Mahomes as the second best quarterback, not only in the AFC, but probably in the NFL.
I don't know if I will go as far to say he's right on the heels of Pat Mahomes, but I think he's on the heels of one-legged Pat Mahomes.
If he wins,
which is a little bit of foreshadowing.
But if he wins a Super Bowl, now you're starting to look at a guy that's starting to start the run that Pat Mahomes was just on.
Yeah.
And so you start looking at accolades, you start looking at trophies, you start looking at all the different individual awards that could go with it, too. Mahomes is still above him, but Mahomes also has been in the league a little longer. But you look at it and say, hey, look, he's on the trajectory where it's hard to argue with him when they say, how long is the window open for you at Joe Burrow with this?
Right.
And he basically says, as long as I'm suiting up and playing for a team.
He's on, and he said that after he locked eyes with me.
Oh, is that right?
He did. Mm-hmm. He did.
Well, the timing is correct. I don't think he basically uses that as the reason why he said
it. It's debatable. Yeah. Watching that game yesterday, though, whenever I look at, you know, watching these two quarterback styles of play, because right now in Houston, one of the things that we're going to talk about for the next 4 months is about the style of play of quarterbacks. And you hear all the time nowadays that you have to have a quarterback with the element that can beat you with his feet. And I disagree wholeheartedly. Still, in modern day NFL football, going into the 2023 season, I don't believe that you need that. I think Pat Mahomes with one ankle, who's not going to be able to be very mobile on Sunday, is still capable enough to be a Super Bowl winning quarterback because he can beat you from the pocket. Mm-hmm. I know that Joe Burrow is an athlete. I'm not saying that Joe Burrow it runs like blankers over here.
If he has to run,
he has a baseline athleticism and is capable of beating you with his feet. But he beat you from the pocket. He beat you by getting rid of the football. He beat you by stepping into the pocket when the rush is coming off of the edges. Joe Burrow is very much like Tom Brady in that fact. Like, Tom Brady is very, very slow. We've all seen Tom Brady run a 40-yard dash, yet Tom Brady has more Super Bowls than any organization in NFL history. You don't need mobility. You have to have good footwork, be able to beat some teams from the pocket, and you have to have a quick release. I saw a stat today that Joey Burrow in yesterday's game got the ball like out of his hands in like 2.5 seconds. Josh Allen was like 3.5. I look at Josh Allen and the way that he plays football, kind of like hero ball. It's hero ball. Kyler Murray, how did he play football? It was hero ball. I think that there's certain quarterbacks in the NFL where we look at their athleticism, we look at their ability to beat you with their legs, and we're like, oh my goodness, you have to have that from a quarterback. No, you don't. Tom Brady has more Super Bowls than any NFL organization. Pat Mahomes can beat teams with one leg. Joe Burrow is athletic, but he's not beating anybody with his legs. He'll scramble every now and then. It is still true in the NFL, despite us going into 2023, despite having more athleticism at the quarterback position than we've ever seen before, you still have to win at that position from the pocket.
No doubt. And look, we always talk about the measurables versus the intangibles. Well, the best have both. And that's why I think that's how important Joe Burrow is, because the combo platter puts him at a different level. He doesn't want to run, but he can, and he knows when to. He doesn't want to make all the tough throws all the time, throwing into tight windows, but he knows when he has to, he can get it done. And the other thing is, he has the ultimate thing that a lot of quarterbacks waver with and Dak's dealing with right now. He always has confidence. Even if he throws a pick, his next throw is going in the same tight window with the full belief that I'm going to put it where it needs to be put and someone's going to catch it.
Mm-hmm.
And he kept doing that. The fact that he went in and you never blinked an eye and thought this dude is overmatched or feeling the pressure in Buffalo yesterday, weather, fans, the whole setting, what the game meant, he came in from the first snap and basically let everyone know, this is my show and I'm going to show you how it's done. And he didn't try to do too much, but he did everything he had to do at a very, very elite level.
Yeah, I think Joe Burrow jumped Josh Allen yesterday whenever we're ranking the top quarterbacks in the league. And I think Joe Burrow's third. He's behind two-legged Pat Mahomes, and he's behind one-legged Pat Mahomes. And then Joe Burrow's a close third to one-legged Pat Mahomes. But to me, this is an overall view of the position. Mobility's great, but you better be able to beat me in the pocket, because Josh Allen's the opposite. Josh Allen doesn't really sit in the pocket a whole lot and pick you apart. He's scrambling. He's forcing turnovers. He's forcing throws, lead to picks, leads to fumbles. You know, that style of football is tough to win. And here's the thing, too. Like, it looks great. You put up great fantasy stats, all of that. whenever you get to the postseason, you have to win at minimum 3 games in a row against playoff caliber competition. Even if you have a bye, you got to win the divisional round, the conference round, and then the Super Bowl. It is very difficult if you're playing this hero brand, hero ball style of the quarterback position, where it's like, go make heroic plays to win 3 consecutive games. You have to have stability, you have to have consistency, and you have to be able to sit in the pocket and make the easy throws, not necessarily the home run each and every drive.
No, and the other thing is, you know, the old gambler Kenny Rogers song, but know when to hold them, know when to fold them. You don't have to try and throw into tight windows on every throw. And because you're smart enough to go through your progressions and you can read the pre-snap read that you're getting from the defense and you know what's likely going to be open, you make the right plays. And then when the game's on the line, because we talked about this and a lot of the Twitchers were bringing up, well, what happens when Purdy is playing from behind as opposed to, you know, basically being in the driver's seat for most of the games he's quarterbacked? Well, you don't have to worry about that with Joe Burrow, because Joe Burrow makes big plays no matter what the clock says and what the scoreboard's telling you. And he showed you time and time again. And if he needed to get a big fourth down or third down, if he needed to make a tough throw or just hang on and be patient enough to make the right throw, he makes every throw. And it looks like every time it leaves his hands, you have total confidence. Yep. It's going where it needs to go. And there's a, it's on the receiver to catch it or not, but it's going to be where it needs to be.
Yep. Well, the Giants lost badly to the Eagles this past week, and it's an interesting situation that the Giants are in, because Brian Daboll takes over. I think that they maximized a lot of the talent on that team. Pretty good defense, very mediocre offense, but brought out the best we've seen of Daniel Jones. Saquon Barkley coming off the injury looked very good. There are some decisions to make in New York, though, because Daniel Jones, of course, the Giants did not pick up his fifth-year player option. They could franchise tag him, but that's very, very expensive for a player of Daniel Jones' caliber. You're looking at top five quarterback money for Daniel Jones. Do you want to pay that? Or they could sign him to a contract extension. Saquon Barkley, kind of in the same situation. Do you tag him, pay him top five running back money, give him a contract extension? You can only tag one. I think the Giants are in a bit of a quandary here with a couple of players. Saquon Barkley, really good, has proven to be injury prone. Daniel Jones looked as good this year as he's ever had. Not sure he's a top 10 quarterback in the league.
Yeah, look, I think that in a lot of ways, Daboll set the tone. I don't think a lot of people just were paying enough attention to hear it. He never said he was great. He said that Daniel Jones was good.
Solid.
He said he was good and did what he was supposed to do. And I don't think that if Daboll has it his way, that he needs or wants a Daniel Jones if there's someone that he could upgrade and get better. And I think that from a Saquon perspective, he was smart by saying, I'm not trying to reset the market. Because you're not supposed to. Being hurt as much as you've been hurt, no matter what you showed this year, durability means availability, and that's the most important thing that you can ask for in ability, especially with a running back, and because they come a dime a dozen these days. And they're best friends. You think that they want to play together? I do. But I think that they're going to have to come with a sweetheart package deal. They're going to have to take less, and they're going to try and do more. And that for the short term, it might buy enough time for Daboll until maybe there's other guys that he wants more later down the road. But I think with all the guys that are out there, with all the swings and misses and missteps that have been made at the quarterback position, you could do a lot worse than Daniel Jones.
Sure.
And you obviously know in a guy like Saquon, he's not your problem. He's been a big answer this year as to reason why they made the playoffs. But you just don't know. The question mark is, can he stay healthy? And once I commit to him for multiple years at millions and millions of dollars, am I going to get this production every year? I'm going to get a guy that looks really good and sweats on the side that I know would look even better in a uniform.
If you can't draft a running back, if you're not everybody says this, people have different logic, different philosophies, but if you're of the belief that you shouldn't draft a running back in the first round, how do you pay a running back top dollar? Like, I would argue that you shouldn't. Daniel Jones, like, very good season, best season he's ever had. Are you willing to overspend on who Daniel Jones really is? And if Brian Daboll is this offensive mastermind, right? Maybe they make a play to go get the quarterback for the future. Right? Maybe they make a play to trade up.
And on the flip side, Jeremy, Daniel Jones could be the perfect guy in terms of a guy that could go to San Francisco and a guy that could do...
Stop it.
I'm just saying, he can run. He's younger.
They're not touching Daniel Jones.
He can make passes. But I'm saying, if they know what they don't want us to know, in terms of they know that Purdy's limited and they know that Trey Lance ain't the guy they thought he was.
Yeah.
When we threw Teddy Bridgewater's name out there, well, if you're Daniel Jones and you want to make a name for yourself again, put yourself on a big stage every weekend and be quarterback of the Niners and just don't screw it up and someone's going to pay you.
I think it'd be a good fit. I just don't think it makes sense from where the 49ers are at that quarterback position. 713-780-ESPN, the HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. Some hints, some rumors coming out of Astros Fan Fest. They drew 35,000 people to Fan Fest, by the way. They draw more people to Fan Fest than the Houston Texans did for the final 2 months of the year. 713-780-ESPN. Let's get into some of what came out of FanFest. Could Brantley be ready for opening day? Do the Astros have a GM in mind? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Talking sports with you, not at you. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Mailbag Monday coming up in 15 minutes. Ask the Killer Bees whatever you want. Ask about the football weekend. Ask about Fan Fest. Ask about me meeting Dusty Baker and locking eyes with Joe Burrow.
Softball tryouts on a Friday night when it was freezing.
What's that?
Softball tryouts on a Friday night when it was freezing.
No one, cares about that. 713-780-3776. If you want to, I'm talking about the audience. I'm not worried about you. Although I do wish good things for your daughter. 713-780-3776. If you want to get your questions in the queue for the Killer Bees, Astros had 35,000 at Fan Fest. An impressive showing for a baseball city inside of a football state. Jeff Bagwell talking about the general manager position. He says they will have a GM before pitchers and catchers report.
We're running pretty smoothly the way it is right now, but we do need a GM, and we will have one. It's, you know, process of the search right now and cutting down candidates and things like that. But, you know, that's important to us right now. Jim's got that handled very well, so everything's running smoothly.
There you go. Jeff Bagwell says that Jeff Bagwell, by the way, the advocate for the Houston Astros, says that they will have a GM in place. Jim Crane said they'll have a GM in place by spring training. Not that they need one.
Did you guess that first part of it?
Well, no, he said we do need one. He said we've been operating well, but we need a GM.
Because I think that he doesn't want to piss Jim Crane off. But I think at the same time, he's pretty confident. He was confident as a baseball player. I think he's pretty confident in what he's been doing.
Jeff Bagwell has no interest in being the general manager.
Not by himself.
He likes being the head of the table.
He likes to golf when he golfs.
Yeah, but he doesn't want to be studying numbers of AAA outfielders. Like, Jeff Bagwell has zero desire to be the general manager of the Houston Astros. He has zero desire to put in that much work. It's why people, when they thought he was going to be the GM, they don't know Jeff Bagwell that well. Bob Nightingale, though, said that the Astros are zeroing in on Dana Brown, who is our top choice.
Yep.
The Atlanta VP of scouting has emerged a clear frontrunner to be the Astros' next GM. This is the dude that's been responsible for building that Atlanta Braves minor league system, pretty much. This is a great hire if he is indeed the man. Get it done. Make it happen. Make sure Dana Brown comes into the fold, because part of what is going to continue to make the Astros great, if they're going to remain great for the next 5 to 6 years, is by being able to build through the minor league system and through player development. Like they've built this golden era, they have to continue that going forward, and I think Dana Brown's the perfect choice there. Now, I want to ask you that question, because Bagwell says that they haven't missed a beat without having a general manager. Do you think the Astros have missed a beat this offseason by not having a GM ever since they fired James Click? Because they're going to go a whole offseason without a general manager.
Yeah, no, look, I don't think that they necessarily missed a beat. I think that even his comments on Yuli, that you're not getting the same kind of attention to detail and the same kind of focus that you would from just a really experienced general manager, but you didn't let guys that you sorely needed get away, and you didn't have all that much housekeeping that you had to do. So when you look at what they were able to do, who they brought in, who either is gone or looks like they're walking away, and holes that needed to be filled, I think they're just fine. And I think that there's still obviously room and time to get even better if they so choose. If they wanted to get creative, or they wanted to spend money and they wanted to go out and get a lefty or another arm in the bullpen, they could do it. Mm-hmm. If they wanted to address a way to enhance the catcher's position behind Maldi and with Maldi, they could do it. If they want to bring Yuli back, they can do it. But it's nothing that's precluded them from doing anything that they've wanted to do this year. They've been in conversations for some of the biggest names. They got an Abreu, which I think basically made everything after that a lot easier to deal with. And I think they've done just fine. But I think Bagwell's right. I think as we get into the actual season itself, and you have to focus on trades and discussions on a daily basis.
Building a draft board.
Your own roster, your draft room, your priorities when it comes to young players coming up the pipeline and in your system with guys you already have, and potential changes you might have to make either this year or in the next, you know, near future, then I think you truly do need a GM, and I'm almost happy to hear him say that.
I don't think that they've missed a beat this offseason. Now, I do want them to have a general manager in place before pitchers and catchers report. Nothing tells me that they won't. Jim Crane told me they will. Jeff Bagwell told me this past weekend at FanFest, 35,000 in attendance, that they will. I believe that they're going to have a GM, and Nightingale has reported three different candidates and now says that they're zeroing in on Dana Brown, who's emerged as the clear frontrunner. So I believe the Astros will have a GM in place by February 17th. I hope that it is Dana Brown, Atlanta's VP of scouting. Now I don't think that they've missed a beat. There are certain things that I think you could nitpick them for. You mentioned a few of them. Lugie, a left-hander for the bullpen. But I don't think it's a necessity. I think you're just fine without one. They won a World Series last year without one, really. I know Will Smith was on the World Series roster, but was not really their guy that they were going to get left-handed hitters out in the World Series. You can nitpick the Yuli Gurriel conversation. I would have personally liked a utility guy because a lot they're saying that David Hensley's going to get all the utility at-bats for the Houston Astros, which is great. I like David Hensley, but it is inevitable that there's going to be an injury. There's probably inevitable there's going to be an injury before you even have opening day. So I would have loved the idea of a utility guy and then David Hensley as your injury guy. When somebody goes on the IL, David Hensley takes the spot, the roster spot of that guy.
Yeah, no, look, and I think as it relates to injuries, you're already dealing with one coming off an injury. I think the one that you're dealing with is Brantley. And that's why I said I don't know that I even expect or want him to be back by opening day. I want him to take his time.
Sure. Because
you're not going to win a World Series in April. You're going to win a World Series in October. And as long as Uncle Mike is ready after a month or two of the season or in the first month of the season, that's fine. But to your point, if you had a versatile guy that you could just plug and play, and you still can, you can move Chaz back to left if he needs to fill in, or just Yordan plays out there, Abreu plays first, and you fuddle with your designated hitter. The team is so talented and so loaded that these are big team problems. These are loaded team problems. Other teams would be scrambling all over the place and a lot more scrutiny, just like we're saying with Dak and the Cowboys, because of who he is and who he plays for and the situation he's in. Because they're in the situation they're in, the general manager isn't going to feel nearly as much pressure because they have such a luxury of talent that they don't have to scramble as much as other teams would. If this was the Cleveland team and they had an issue with their left fielder, it'd be more of a panic mode and a lot more pressure on the general manager than it is for the Three Stooges or whoever's running the Astros right now.
Right. The three things that I needed done this offseason, I didn't care about the nitpicks as much. Would I have liked some of them? Would I have liked a utility guy? Yes. But the three things that you had to cross off after letting Justin Verlander go, which we were on board with in early September, was you need a first baseman, Jose Abreu. You need a left fielder, DH, Michael Brantley, and you need at least one arm. It could be a starter, it could be a reliever, if you're letting Verlander go, and they brought back Rafael Montero. Mm-hmm. Some people are saying that they overspent. I think that the AAV is probably a little bit high. It's not enough to break you one way or another. You're giving them an extra $3 million over what was the predicted AAV in an offseason where everybody got more money than their predictive AAV. Here's another piece of evidence, though, that Yuli Gurriel is not going to be a Houston Astro. And I think it's probably the biggest nail in the coffin there is, because there's been a lot of rumors he's going to Miami. They're going to wait to make it official. I don't know if he goes to Miami or not. Who knows?
Did you hear 2-year deal yet?
I've seen some people put that on Twitter.
It's crazy.
Yeah. But it doesn't, like, in fact, I was reading a report, too, that Bob Nightingale said this. Bob Nightingale said the Astros gave Yuli Gurriel a one-year offer to be a utility guy, but he was not interested in that, whether it was the one-year deal
or
whether it was the fact that he wasn't going to be a starter. Okay. So the Astros gave him a one-year offer. Yuli said no. And quite frankly, I'm not signing Yuli for 2 years, and I'm not signing him to get every day at bat.
I don't like the 2 years, and if he can get it somewhere else, more power to him.
Yep.
That's where you tip your cap and say you'll always be a fond memory in history of the Astros. We're always going to love you. We're not mad at you. Don't be mad at us. Right. We can't see 2 years.
The two teams I've seen are Miami and Minnesota. I'd be shocked if either one of them give them a straight up 2-year contract, maybe like a vesting option, maybe a club option, something like that. But they're going to give them every day at bats, which he's not going to get in Houston. But the biggest piece of evidence that Yuli is gone is what Yordan Alvarez was saying at FanFest. As soon as Jose Abreu, signed, I was able to call and say hello to him. We've gotten a chance to talk a lot more. I'm super excited for him to be there. It was hard losing Yuli. But losing a Cuban and getting a Cuban guy, I feel really excited for him, Abreu, to be here. Jordan Alvarez said it was hard losing
Yuli. Wow, I didn't hear that quote.
He said it was hard losing Yuli. Yuli's gone.
Yeah, he gone.
Yuli's gone. I mean, it was. We've already felt that way, but this is the final nail in the coffin. Yuli Gurriel will not be a Houston Astro. Nightingale says they gave him a one-year offer to be a backup. Not interested, whether it's the second year, whether it's every day at bats. And Yordan Alvarez just said it was hard losing Yuli.
Yeah, then he's gone.
He's not going to be here.
No. And again, more power to him if he can get a two-year deal. At that age, coming off that volatile the last couple of years of his career, and coming off an injury in the playoffs, hey, man, if you can get it, go get it. And we're not mad at you. Don't be mad at us. And if you want to go to Astros Light and you want to go with Correa and you want to go with your new catcher and you want to, you know, be a part of, you know, a three-headed monster of former Astros that are going to play every day for the Twins, well, go knock yourself out and have a good time. And maybe if you're hot, you can end up being traded to another contender. But at the same time, it's not worth the risk. And the Astros are, again, are in such a position of luxury. And then once they brought Abreu in, they had already moved on in their minds. Mm-hmm. Unless, for the sake of the fans and the feel-good story, they kept him around to be a bench guy, to be a swan song. If you're getting 2 years out of that deal, there's no way the Astros are getting in the middle of that mix.
713-780-ESPN, the HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Mailbag Monday. You can ask the Killer Bees whatever you want to ask us. It's next on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.